Good afternoon. Welcome. This is Studio A on the Messenger of Good News. We are worldwide KFUO. I'm Roland Lettner, your host. Thank you for spending some of your time with us this Saturday afternoon. 2015 is the 40th anniversary of the communist North Vietnamese victory over the South. With the pop narrative of the Vietnam War having been written and ingrained into our culture by Hollywood, the North Vietnamese communist regime is regularly painted as some virtuous organization of liberators of the South, when in reality they followed an established pattern of totalitarian regimes. They brutalized their people, they imprisoned innocents, they literally beat the nation into conformity to the communist norm, murdering all opponents of the regime and imposing a strict pogrom of propaganda and indoctrination in the communist ethos. But there is a new book out this month that confronts with unapologetic steadfastness the flawed history of that era, and it demonstrates that the war in South Vietnam was in reality a correct and noble endeavor. And it also chronicles how Americans were beguiled into abandoning their own soldiers and how a peace with honor was nothing short of a betrayal of the people of South Vietnam. Duk, A Reporter's Love for a Wounded People, is the well-crafted memoir of Dr. Uwe Simonetto. It's his experience as a young West German war correspondent for 5 years in Vietnam, and it's the subject of today's Studio A program. Joining me from his home in Capistrano Beach, California, is Dr. Uwe Simonetto, a Lutheran lay theologian and international journalist with over 50 years of experience, the former religious affairs editor for the United Press International. Uwe, welcome. Thank you for being on the program again, and thank you for giving me this exclusive interview about the release of your latest work, Duk.
Wonderful to be back. Thank you.
When it comes to pronouncing Duk, I hope I didn't pronounce that wrong. I hope I did well.
It sounds roughly like Duk, you know, like that.
And that word has more than just one translation.
It means German. It also means virtuous. And it is also a first name in Vietnamese. Very common first name like John or so. And I titled it Duk for three reasons. Well, two reasons, really. One is because the Vietnamese, knowing that I was German, and for a long time I was the only regular German correspondent there. Many German newspapermen flew in and out of Saigon. But I for a very long time, I was the only one who was so semi-permanently stationed there. My Vietnamese friends just couldn't pronounce Uwe Simonetto. I mean, most people can't. So they called me Duk.
Duk, not only the title of your book, but it was also the name of a homeless boy who lived on the streets of Saigon near the hotel where you were living as a war correspondent. And your story begins with this young street boy named Duk. Explain who he is.
He was the head street urchin in my sort of block in Saigon, near the opposite the Continental Palace Hotel where I lived. And I had an ancient motor car, which I'd rented, but it was more or less my car where I got it from, Hertz. It was a 1938 Citroen. Huge thing, very, very thirsty. It gave me 8 miles to the gallon. Front wheel driven, but no power steering. But it had one thing, it had a sort of sticker in the windscreen identifying me as Bao Chi Duk, which means German press. And it had the German flag there, it was issued by the German embassy in Saigon. And so one day, just at the beginning of the monsoon season, as I parked my car into a very tiny slot, the street urchin who'd been selling newspapers to me for weeks, stood in front of me just as I was trying to get out and pointed at this sticker and said, "You, Duk, my name, Duk, we both, Duk, we are brothers." Okay, so he said, and he was about 12, and he said, "Well, you know, I want to make a business deal with you. You number one, you number one always means you're tops, you're the best, you know. If you're not number one, you're number 10, then you're the worst. But in this case, I was the best." So that also means, Duk, by the way, I mean, you're very virtuous. "So you're number one. I have a deal for you. If you allow us homeless children to sleep in your car during the monsoon rain," monsoon rain, you must understand, is water comes down in sheets, sort of like a guillotine, it sort of slices you into two. And these kids were in the streets, so they were sleeping in sort of entrances to the neighboring buildings. And they were anything from five to all homeless and all orphans. anywhere from 5 to 12 or 13, 14, or trying to sell newspapers. So if you let us stay in this car, we'll keep it clean for you, we'll keep it safe for you. And I said, well, sure, you can sleep, especially since my car had no lock anywhere. The lock was gone. So I said, well, you sleep in this car, you keep it clean. I mean, the one thing you can be sure of, the Vietnamese, is that they're clean. And so this guy gave a cat call, and eight little toddlers came out of the out of the street. The house, the entrance is on the street, Lewis Street in Saigon, just before the rain came down. And they all sneaked in. So two took the back seats, and there were jump seats in between. So two took there, and a couple were in the front seats, and then one each between the back seats and the jump seats. So and the car was full, and Dick, the head honcho there, took the driver's seat. And then they wound up the window, and at that point, the rain came down and really fiercely. And I ran over to my hotel drenched, and I just wanted to have a beer. But at that point, I first had to take a shower and then have a whiskey to keep warm. And this is how the book starts. So that was the beginning of my love affair with the Vietnamese, because never in my 5 years on and off of Vietnam did I feel as proud of myself as when I saw these kids all nice and snug in my car and not getting drenched, you know.
Uwe, how does that boy and your friendship with him serve as a narrative for your Vietnam experience?
Well, the young boy served as a narrative. Well, first of all, he stood for the totality of the book he stood for the reason why I wrote this book in the first place, and that is that of all the books about Vietnam, masses, very, very few have actually addressed the key issue, and that is the people of Vietnam. They were the ones who suffered. They were the ones who, as I say, were betrayed by the Americans, who handed them over to the communists in the end, with the result that hundreds of thousands of them were slaughtered, or wound up in hundreds of thousands more wound up in concentration camps to be tortured, and 200,000 drowned as boat people in the South China Sea, and 400,000 came over here to North America in the first wave, and of course made it well, and unfortunately highly unrecognized minority, unrecognized because they're doing so well. That's not fashionable to do well and be industrious and be recognized for that. They are fantastic people, and I'm very linked to that. So Dick stood for the suffering Vietnamese, but also for the Vietnamese personality. There's a lot of humor, and you will find in the book very humorous episodes, even though obviously this book tells a tragic story, but I mean even tragic stories have their life past. Then Dick saw me. I lost the sight of Dick in the end because I became very ill with anemic dysentery, and he accompanied me in my car, in this particular car, to the American Naval Hospital. Then I had to leave him, and I lost my, lost consciousness. I dropped semi-dead, and I was actually out of it for 3 days. And later turned out I left my car with the engine running outside the naval hospital, and Dick, being a Vietnamese street urchin, obviously could not enter an American military establishment. And so we lost sight of each other, and when I got back to Vietnam later, I mean, I was evacuated to Germany as soon as the American military naval doctors had stabilized me. When I came back from Germany, and was well enough again, this Dick had disappeared. But there is another, Dick stood for another guy, and that was much later. I did a story, actually I meant to write a novel about it, but I never got around to writing this novel. It's about the Buffalo Boys. And then the pivotal figure, central figure in this, would have been another boy called Dick, whose name was also Dick. I mean, he was a real person. He was a Buffalo boy who had witnessed the massacre of his parents and his siblings by the Viet Minh. This was in French days, by the Viet Minh, because the family, or this guy's father, had been working for the French-controlled government and were slaughtered. And they were disemboweled, and the boys and men had their genitals cut off and stuffed into their mouths. And he, just as his turn came to be slaughtered, he dropped to the feet, and all the villagers who were forced to watch this execution gingerly stepped in front of this this child, hiding him from the sight of the Viet Minh goons. And when he realized that he had been forgotten, he made a dash for the jungle and ran and ran and ran and ran, and then collapsed at some point in what seemed to be a meadow. And when he woke up, there was something very heavy but very warm on top of him. And it turns out that this was a water buffalo. And then he crawled under from under the buffalo's belly and was surrounded by a bunch of kids like him. And they said, well, welcome to the club. They knew what had happened to his family. Well, we are orphans like you. And then they formed a guild, a family, and they farmed themselves out to the local farmers to mind their buffaloes. And they educated themselves. And it's a big story involved with that. But they also became the early warning systems for both sides in the war, depending on which side treated them better. You know, you've traveled up the up the main roads of South Vietnam, and you saw these buffaloes with these kids riding on top of them. The kids would announce you either to the South Vietnamese and American forces or to the Viet Cong, depending on who they were. And there's a big story involved with none of this stuff that I've ever seen anywhere in an American publication, and as indeed I found precious little about the Vietnamese people in American books, which I found regrettable, because after all, if you had the Vietnam War, so at least let's factor in the Vietnamese people.
As you chronicle in the book, you spent about 5 years as a combat correspondent in Vietnam. You watched men fight. You saw them die. The same gunfire that killed those men was also aimed at you. But the war you describe in the book doesn't match, as I mentioned earlier, the pop history of that war generated by Hollywood and left-wing commentators of that day. Is that why the average American doesn't grasp, as well as you do, what this conflict was really all about?
Well, yes, it does differ. Now, look, it differs, you know, like all clichés, there's always, all clichés are partially true and partially false. And the Vietnam War has become a cliché in this country and the world over. And it's been portrayed by, let's say, the liberals as a form of national liberation from oppression and the corrupt regime and all that sort of thing, and the good side won. Then, of course, you have a minority of people who would agree with me that the wrong side won, but even those people did not explain it properly. You even hear nowadays on some people on Fox television say, well, you know, South Vietnamese were a bunch of corrupt people. And I'm not saying that the South Vietnamese government were the sort of prime example of democratic and free government. There was corruption there, but then peace. I mean, we're living in a country where four of the seven governors, last seven governors of the state of Illinois, are in the slammer for corruption. I mean, so it is pretty self-righteous to say that a government like Vietnam should be at least it should be better than the Americans. I mean, that to me seems rather ridiculous. Secondly, nobody seems to realize or seems to ponder a couple of incontrovertible facts about the Vietnam War. Firstly, who were the antagonists? The antagonists were Ho Chi Minh. Ho Chi Minh was a co-founder of the French Communist Party. He was, since 1923, in the employ of the Comintern, in other words, of the Soviet Communist Party. His task, his duty as a Soviet agent was to rid Indochina of the very bona fide nationalist opposition to French colonial rule. He actually delivered them to the guillotines, the French guillotines and prisons, in order to then establish his own power in Indochina, and he did this very successfully. Secondly, how did they accomplish that? They accomplished it, Ho Chi Minh and his sidekick, Vo Nguyen Giap, who was also the architect of the very successful strategy of guerrilla warfare. What was their principal means? Principal means was terror, terrorizing people into submission. It has never been, certainly as when by the time the Americans got there, there might have been a time when Vietnamese trusted Ho Chi Minh, but by and large, the only reason why they followed Ho Chi Minh was terror. It was slaughter. By have massacred in scenes that I describe in my book. They were given no choice but to cooperate. Thirdly, when even to the very end of the Vietnam War in 1975, which the communists won due to the fact primarily that the U.S. Congress had ceased delivering arms to the Vietnamese armed forces fighting without American help after 1973, even then, the refugees came in the direction of South Vietnam, never of North Vietnam. I don't know where my colleagues were who covered this war with me out there, but I mean, what was most remarkable, you never heard of an incident that an entire village population or urban population fled in the direction of the communists. No, they all came south, even until there was no more than a square yard to defend. They still came, and they still came south. They never went north, with the very exception of immediately after the division of Vietnam in 1954, when some South Vietnamese communists, 130,000 or so, moved north, while about a million non-communists moved south.
Where is the church in all this? Why doesn't the church now or then speak more vigorously about right and wrong, good and evil? When's the last time you heard a preacher from the pulpit deal with such things as the Vietnam War and how that turned out? I think one of the things you bring out when you discuss democracies and their approach to this protracted war in Vietnam, Christ used to be at the center of civilized Western democracies. But since the social upheaval in the era of Vietnam and since that time, the church seems to have made a peace without honor, a peace without honor with our culture. What do you think?
Well, you might not use the pulpit for that, but you might use other venues for that when you have adult courses and say, what is it? What constitutes Christian life? I mean, you know, in the Lutheran Church, we preach according to the lectionary cycle, and you can, of course, Scripture does not tell us whether we are to be a democracy or a monarchy, but it tells us about natural law. You can see it in Paul, and of course, natural law doesn't is almost indistinguishable from mosaic law. But nothing stops us from discussing church and society matters and Christian lifestyles in adult classes, but I don't see that very often. I see it in my congregation, thank God, in Faith Lutheran in Capistrano Beach, but then this is an outstanding congregation. But I don't see it much. And I see it even less elsewhere and in other denominations and in other countries where we say, well, no, we have to be tolerant. You know, tolerant has become the news of idle or the tolerant. We have to be tolerant. We have to be tolerant of the cultural ways of the Islamists, you know. So let them stone women together if they think that's what we have to do. And after all, they're just Afghans also. It is so incredible. I mean, I'm meeting here, and I've met in Germany, Afghan women refugees from Afghanistan. They're heartbroken. They say, well, you know, they're mingling now with the Vietnamese, and they say, well, you know, we are going to be butchered, our sisters and our cousins and our aunts, we're going to be butchered by that. And none of it doesn't even occur to your secular media, and that includes even the conservative ones here, that if God places a nation like the United States at the head of the left hand kingdom, as we call it, as Lutherans, then there is a sense of responsibility. There has to be a sense of responsibility. You can't just treat other nations and other cultures and other commitments the way you treat half-eaten hamburgers. Just throw them in a trash can when you get bored with it, or toys that you no longer want to fix or play with. It is, and you know, it is not a very happy thing for me, having lived in America on and off for 50 years, to see what I so strongly believed and shared in the American culture go absolutely down the drain because people no longer have to think, people no longer can think in analogies, and are no longer getting informed, and do not even ask to be informed properly by their media. That is the most horrendous thing, I think, we are living through.
Now, by this point in the conversation, Uwe, somebody may be wondering why. Why yet another book on Vietnam? There's so many that are already out there. Why relive these awful things? Why not just let this story rest in peace, as so many of the men who fought and died in that war are doing so now?
Well, because in Vietnam, the precedent was set that influencing decision making in the United States right now, as it did in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and it really poses the question, which is a very vital one, which I'd like to discuss with you in the next segment too, whether a democracy, an American type democracy, populist democracy, which is a dangerous type, can actually effectively fight a protracted war against an evil force to a successful conclusion, whether it's psychologically and politically capable of doing so. And that is something that has to be discussed.
Uwe, I have to jump in. We have less than a minute before we have to go to our first break. The book is available from where?
Well, the book is already available at Simon Netto, Simon-Netto.org. As of the end of this month, it will be out on Amazon.com and ultimately at a Kindle edition in an e-book.
When we get back, briefly explain why the American public became so easily convinced that the South Vietnamese army just couldn't and wouldn't fight. This is Studio A. Dr. Uwe Simonetto has joined me in this world-exclusive interview to discuss his recent release of his memoir about his time as a war correspondent in Vietnam. The book is called Duc, A Reporter's Love for a Wounded People. Dr. Simonetto and I will be back on Studio A in just a moment. Stay tuned.